This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. More than 20 inches of snow has already fallen on Boston, and it's still coming down as the blizzard of 2015 continues to remind us all what winter can mean in New England. By the time the worst has passed, sometime tonight, it will have dumped 30 inches of snow or more on eastern and southeastern Massachusetts.
A travel ban remains in effect in the eastern part of the state, though it has been lifted in parts of the west. Flooding has forced evacuations from some coastal communities. There are outages across parts of Massachusetts, particularly the southeastern part of the state, the Cape and Nantucket.
Here's Governor Charlie Baker speaking a little while ago at the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency's bunker in Framingham.
This is clearly a very big storm for most of Massachusetts, and I'm glad we had a little bit of advance warning to plan for it, and I think that's going to help us in terms of our ability to get out of it early and to make it possible for people to get back up and operating as soon as possible sometime tomorrow.
Joining us from the state bunker in Framingham is WBUR's Bruce Gellerman. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, hello.
So what are the biggest concerns right now? We heard a pretty calm Governor Baker, but what are the big concerns that state officials are talking about out there?
Well, there are a couple of concerns. One, is, of course, the coastal flooding. There's going to be high tide between 4 and 5 o'clock. It should be lower than the previous tides that we've experienced during the storm, but they're still concerned because places like Chatham, places along the coast, have really been hit hard. And so, there hasn't been that much damage, but there has been flooding. People were evacuated from Hull and Scituate. So that's the major concern.
Right. I know that the officials spoke about power outage numbers. They weren't as high as folks were expecting, I gather, because of colder temperatures and lighter snow.
Exactly. Right. And so the numbers are something like this, about 38,000 across the state, but 12,000 of those and a little bit more are people on Nantucket. The whole island lost its electricity when two transformers went down. They were hit by substations, were hit by ocean spray. So the whole island has been down. They've been using backup generators for the hospital in certain places. They hope, National Grid says it hopes to have it up in a few hours, but that remains to be seen.
Right. Now, listening to Charlie Baker there, I mean, he talked about the importance of having a little bit of advanced warning. I mean, I know this is a serious storm, but it sounds like public officials kind of feel like they've got this under control.
Yeah, they did. And they keep on saying that, basically the National Weather Service is the real hero here because they were predicted with such precision and they were able to prepare for it. And the other thing they're taking credit for is the fact that the travel ban, you might remember in 2013 in February when we had a travel ban because of a snowstorm, there was a lot of people being angry about it. There wasn't a word of that this time. So, I was on Route 9 earlier this morning and the route was completely plowed. I mean, so people are starting to get a sense that, okay, they reacted well to this, and so recovery should take place fairly quickly once they kind of decide that the snowstorm is gone.
Right, and Charlie Baker was talking there about getting back to normal sometime tomorrow. What's the word on how long this storm is going to continue?
Ooh, that's the gross national product question, isn't it? so we won't know that till the governor, we hear from him again. That's going to be first, second, and third questions to him. When are you going to lift the travel ban? The travel ban was lifted, he announced earlier today, in 4 western counties because it was basically kind of like 2 snowstorms. There was the western part of the state got light snow and the eastern got heavy snow. And in fact, it's still snowing outside as far as I know because I'm 35 feet underground, so I really don't know if it's snowing.
Right. All right. Well, that's WBUR's Bruce Gellerman joining us from underground at the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency's bunker in Framingham. Thank you, Bruce.
You're welcome, Anthony.
And as Bruce mentioned, outages. The latest numbers that we have indicate that there are more than 30,000 people without power in Massachusetts, the highest number of outages right now in Provincetown and on Nantucket. Earlier today, Massachusetts Energy Secretary Matthew Beaton said crews have not been able to fully assess the number of outages yet.
And until the storm, and especially the winds, subside, workers can't get up into their bucket trucks who need a wind speed of about 32 miles an hour to get this. So we're still a ways away, especially in the coastal areas.
So Beaton says it's hard to know exactly when power will be restored to everyone.
Hours, I think, maybe in some instances, days in others, there's going to be a wide variety of issues and equipment failure. So until we get a full assessment of what the situation is, it's hard to put a time frame on it.
WBUR's Asma Hallett has been witnessing this firsthand. She is at the DoubleTree Hotel in Hyannis, which has been without power since 8 o'clock this morning. Hello, Asma.
Hi, Deb. How are you?
Okay, so these high winds are causing huge problems, not just outages, but crews not being able to repair.
That's right. I mean, I am staying at this hotel where there's actually quite a few NSTAR crews here. There's also tree trimming crews here. And for most of the morning, they were hunkered down in the hotel lobby, sort of just waiting by exit doors, waiting to get outside. But they were telling me that they've had orders that they're not allowed to really go out. And part of this is what we heard Matt Beaton, the Secretary of Energy, say earlier, that it's just not possible when you have high wind speeds. And earlier this morning, we had wind gusts of about 60 miles an hour on the Cape. And it's just not possible to get up in those bucket trucks to do the restoration work they need to do. That being said, the winds have sort of tapered down in the last, I would say, about 2 hours. And so it's just downstairs, and you're starting to see some NSTAR guys peter out, but I still don't think those wind gusts are down to the point where they can really get up to do the work they need to do.
So aside from NSTAR crews, who else is staying at the DoubleTree Hotel?
Well, you sort of have all these interesting people. You know, certainly the hotel is full, I think, of NSTAR crews, tree trimming crews, people who sort of need to be here to get the city back to working. But there's also sort of interesting folks who are just essentially trying to weather the storm here. I met one gentleman who came in on the last ferry from Nantucket yesterday. He knew Nantucket was going to get hit really hard. As Bruce mentioned, it has been hit severely. Essentially, the whole island lost power. And so he figured he wanted to get out of there before things got really bad. And I also met this woman. Her name is Sonia Soderberg. She's 76 years old, and she moved to the area recently to retire.
I'm getting up there in age, and I didn't want to be in the house by myself alone. And I'm new to the area, so I thought it'd be safer to be in a hotel.
And Sonia hasn't left the hotel since. She told me she arrived here yesterday afternoon. The roads were already getting slick. She took a cab here, and the cab driver said that was his last trip of the day. She's hoping to go home tomorrow.
And just briefly, Asma, tell us what it's like outside.
Well, I did venture outside a couple of times. I tried to sort of get a lay of the land, and I will say that those wind gusts are extraordinarily powerful. I mean, truly, Deb, I couldn't keep myself upright very easily just because the winds are so powerful. I tried to take photos and videos. But I think that it's getting sort of better as the afternoon is coming on us. But in the morning in particular, I mean, it was essentially like whiteout conditions. And the wind is really the problem here more than the snow. And the wind is essentially the problem that's also led to us having power outages.
Okay, WBUR's Asma Hallett in Hyannis. Asma, thanks for being with us, and please stay safe.
You're welcome.
All right, let's check in with WBUR's Fred Tice, who's reporting now from Marshfield. And Fred, Marshfield, of course, a coastal community to the south of Boston. What are you seeing there?
Well, Anthony, I've just crossed over into Scituate from Marshfield. And what we saw in Marshfield was the damage is not nearly as bad as what we've been seeing in Scituate. In Marshfield and in Scituate, we've seen a lot of power lines that are out. A lot of neighborhoods are without power. We did see in Marshfield a wall that was hit by the ocean. I'm traveling with WBUR photographer Jesse Costa, and it had kind of wiped out much of the first floor of a house there. But it's in Scituate that I would say that the biggest damage we've seen today.
And so give us a sense of what you saw there in Scituate.
That when we were there at low tide quite a while ago, maybe an hour or two ago, 2 hours ago, and the water was still standing across Jericho Road. The road was impassable. The residents in that neighborhood were quite worried about what would happen at high tide, which is in 2 hours. It's supposed to be a lower high tide than the morning high tide, but then again, you have to think about the storm surge and what the impact of that will be.
Sure. So is there concern? Have you seen? I mean, I gather with the high tide comes concern about flooding, of course, right?
Very much so. That's what the residents in that neighborhood are worried about. In other words, one neighborhood around along Jericho Road near downtown Scituate was still flooded. And so even though it was low tide, and so the water is supposed to recede, and it had not receded, and so they're just really worried about how much higher the water will go when the next high tide comes.
All right. Well, some nervousness there about the next high tide, which I gather is coming at about 4 o'clock, so that's a little bit less than
5 o'clock here in Scituate.
5 o'clock. All right. WBUR's Fred Tice reporting there from Scituate. Fred, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony.
And stay with us. We'll have more on this blizzard. We'll also take a look at the history of some of New England's worst storms. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. So, the snow is still falling in Boston, as we've been telling you. So, we don't know exactly where this storm will rank on the list of New England blizzards. But we do know this isn't the worst storm this region has been through.
In fact, as big as this storm is, it doesn't seem close to the blizzard of 78, which you've probably heard from many old-timers. That storm killed more than 100 people, and it was a devastating and unexpected nor'easter. To remind us how bad it was, here's tape from Jim Westover from WEEI.
The State Department of Public Works has started a rescue effort for motorists stranded on Route 128. We just had a report for you. Scattered power outages have hit the metropolitan area of Boston, including the Back Bay and Copley Square neighborhoods. The mayor of Revere says that city is virtually underwater, about a third of it anyway, with high waters forcing wide-scale evacuations. The entire state declared under a state of emergency by Governor Dukakis.
That tape from 1978, from the big blizzard of 1978. Listeners, we want to hear from you in this next segment. What are you doing today? How are you dealing with this storm? And were you around for the blizzard of 78? How does today compare to that storm? Let us know. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. We're talking about the history of big blizzards. And joining us now from Los Angeles, where, by the way, it's a balmy 70 degrees, is former Governor Michael Dukakis. He was the guy in charge back in 1978. And welcome back to Radio Boston, Governor. It's good to have you.
Thanks. Thanks, Anthony.
So take us back, February 6, 1978, 3 days, 27 inches of snow. I gathered it took a lot of folks by surprise. When did you realize that the storm was really going to be a historic event?
Well, I did a monthly talk show on one of the Boston stations where I invited people to call in and, you know, if they had concerns, complaints, and so forth, to share them with me and with one of the members of my staff, happened to be a guy named Lou Murray. And we did this on a regular basis, and it just happened that that evening I was doing the show and the snow was falling and falling and falling. Fortunately for me, Lou was able to drive me back to my home, and the radio studio was in Copley Square, and then he had to make it all the way back to Lowell. I think finally it took him about 3 hours. But it was clear by that time that things were happening. The other thing that people tend to forget is that we had had a storm that had dropped about 15 or 16 inches on us about, as I recall, 10 or 12 days before, and it had been particularly difficult to get that snow out of there. Mm-hmm. So you had a good deal of that, and then we end up with, what was it, 27 inches on top
of
it.
I see.
And high winds, especially along the coast, and the combination of those two storms really was devastating.
Yeah, if I remember, I do remember this. I was actually in school up in Maine, but I remember I had friends in Boston who lived through that storm. And do I recall correctly that the big challenge in the city was just where to put all the snow, right? There just wasn't...
Well, it was a lot of that, but at the time, the question was, you know, how do we deal with this thing? And the one big lesson we learned from that storm, which I think every governor since has learned and followed, is that you don't fool around. Hmm. Now, forecasting at that time was not as good as it is today. So the forecast wasn't anywhere near as serious as it turned out that the storm was. But we had people in the city. We had people getting all tied up on 128 trying to get home and that kind of thing. And particularly starting with Governor Patrick, and Charlie Baker is obviously following that same course, it's clear these days that governors say, if it looks like a big one, don't come to work, and if you're working, go home at the earliest possible time and close the place down. So that the folks that are supposed to be doing the job of removing the snow and, by the way, getting help to a lot of people. I mean, we delivered, as I recall, hundreds, maybe thousands of hot meals to shut-ins and older people and that kind of thing. Never, you can't do that when you've got people all jammed up and tied up in the storm and that kind of thing. So getting people not to come or sending them home right away clearly is something that you've just got to do. And I remember that particularly. Lots of stories that came out of that, by the way, some of them very funny.
Yeah, Governor Dukakis, can you tell us something about that? I mean, I know you took a helicopter tour of the storm damage at that time.
I went down to the South Shore. You just had somebody talking about Scituate. I took a helicopter the next day. And it was like some giant had taken those houses like matchboxes and just thrown them all over the coast. I'd never seen anything like it. Just scattered all over the place, these houses. And remember, too, we didn't have tough environmental standards in those days. And in the years earlier when those houses had been built on barrier beaches and that kind of stuff, today we'd never allow that kind of thing. So you had homes out there that were very vulnerable. And it was really unbelievable. I just never seen anything quite like it.
How about one of the funny stories?
Well, one of the funniest involves some guy who I think lived up in Burlington or Bedford or someplace who got so stir-crazy that he decided he'd go to work at Polaroid in Cambridge and get into his car and started driving down 93, which was totally isolated. I mean, there was nobody there. And we had National Guard folks out, and one of them was patrolling, and here comes this guy. He pulls him over, says, who are you? What are you doing here? And do you have any special permission? And the guy kind of sheepishly says, geez, I really don't. I mean, I got stir crazy. I decided to go to work. So the National Guardsman tells him, get out of the car. Lock the car. Put your keys in your pocket, turn around, and head back home. and the guy,
that's
the
amazing,
guy starts walking back. I mean, he must have a good 5 or 6 miles. And then he heard the National Guardsman say, wait a second. The guardsman takes out a piece of paper and a pen and writes a note on it, says, gives it to him, says, put this in your pocket, and when you get home, read it. Well, what's the guy going to do? He's embarrassed. He feels ridiculous. His car's by the side of the road. He's got to walk back to Burlington or wherever he's going. And after about a half a mile, he decides to put his hand in his pocket, and he takes out the piece of paper, and the National Guardsman had written on it, this man is mentally incompetent.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking to former Governor Michael Dukakis. He was governor of the state back in 1978 when we had 3 days, 27 inches of snow. It went down in history as one of the great blizzards of modern times. If you have recollections or if you want to just talk about this storm and what you're observing, give us a call at 800-423-8255. Governor, stand by. We've got Peter on the line. He's calling from Cambridge. He's got a recollection from 1978. Peter, go ahead.
Hello. Well, I'd spent time in Canada, so I was used to storms, and I was working as a paperback buyer at Wordsworth Bookstore, and the owner, Hillel Stavis, simply said, hey, this thing is major. We're going to close. It was about 9 o'clock. So I looked up at the sky, and I thought about it, and I said, oh, this is ridiculous. There's nothing going on. I went to the Orson Welles to watch a movie called Iphigenia about human sacrifice, you know. I got out to the most howling crash wagon of a thing, snow, wind, things blowing around, heavy objects just being carried in the air. And I lived, as I do now, about 3 blocks from where the theater used to be, right near Ellery Street. And, dear God, it took 45 minutes to get home, and I fell down, and I got back. There's my roommate, nice and warm, asking, oh, what did the cat drag in, you know? And I was like, I was going to kill him. But it was just the most amazing thing, and it's still, I've seen lots of storms, but that one really still stands out very heavily for me.
Well, Peter, thank you for that recollection. And Governor, I just want to ask you about it because, I mean, it's easy to be sort of lighthearted about a big blizzard, but back in 78, a lot of people died. I mean, it was there was some serious stuff going on there.
We lost people in many ways, tragically. Another reason why you really want to shut things down at the earliest possible time. and run the risk that maybe the storm won't be as bad as the forecasters say it is, but it's a risk you're perfectly willing to run to avoid that kind of thing. The hero of 78 was my Secretary of Public Safety, Charlie Barry. And I'll tell you a quick story about this. About 2 weeks before the storm, Charlie came to me, and he was a remarkable guy. He was the number three guy in the Boston Police Department when I recruited him to come over and become Secretary of Public Safety. He was my Secretary of Public Safety for every minute of the 12 years I was governor. And fortunately for us, Charlie was obsessed with the importance of emergency planning. Fortunately, because the rest of us were not, believe me. He was the old man of the administration. He was 52 at the time. I was in my early 40s. And he came to me a couple of weeks before the great blizzard and said, I need a half an hour at the next cabinet meeting to go over the new emergency plan. And I said, Charlie, we've got a million things to do. I mean, can't you wait until another cabinet meeting? No, this is... Well, he was such a wonderful guy, you couldn't turn him down. So I said, okay, you got 20 minutes. And so he took 20 minutes with this detailed new emergency plan, which he and his people had worked out, and discussed it with the cabinet and so forth. And they all had their assignments and this kind of thing. If it had not been for that guy and his leadership and his insistence that we take this seriously, I shudder to think of what would have happened. As it was, we, you know, lost lives and a variety of other things. But thanks to Secretary Barry, we were much readier for the thing than we otherwise would have been. And when it started falling, Charlie's plan went into effect, and it worked beautifully, all things considered.
Okay, Governor Dukakis, stand by for one moment. We just want to introduce someone here who has looked at the history of storms. John Horgan is a local historian and host of the TV show The Folklorist. John, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hello.
So we've been reminiscing here about the blizzard of 78. Tell us, how does it stack up in terms of storms that have hit this area?
Well, in regard to the top 10 all-time in Boston proper, it ranks number two. But if you look back at the great storms to slam into Boston over antiquity, it's in the top five, I would say.
Hmm. And how about this storm? I know we don't know yet, but where are you thinking it might fall in terms of ratings?
I don't think he's going to crack the top five in terms of the measurements in Boston, but in other areas, outlying communities like Worcester, perhaps it will. So maybe five or six all time.
You know what I'm curious about? Someone who's looked at the history of storms and storms dating back centuries here, how did they clean up after storms, way back in the previous century? We talked about how much we've learned since Governor Dukakis' time, since 1978, in terms of preparing and environmental issues and cleaning up. But how was it done hundreds of years ago?
That's a great question. Obviously, they used carts to truck the snow away with horse teams, but they had spades, hoes, axes, picks, wooden shovels, cast of iron. In fact, in 1786, the triple storms, that was the first record of people actually being paid to remove snow in Boston. And then when the great blizzard of 1888 hit in March of 1888, they had oxen teams that used rollers to flatten out the snow so people could move across it. And just then they had introduced snow plows, which were also horse-drawn teams. They were only in use for a couple of years.
John and Governor Dukakis, stand by. We want to just get another caller on the line. Let's go to Susan, who's calling from Wellesley. She has a recollection from 78. Susan, you're on the line.
Yes, hello. Thank you. This brings back a lot of memories for me. I was a freshman at Wellesley College. I'm from California originally. And so this was my first winter. I'd never experienced.
Oh, boy. Welcome to the neighborhood, Susan. Right.
And so it was such a shock for me. I almost, after the storm, I was calling my parents saying, I think I might reconsider staying here. But the thing I remember is the only way you could get around was with cross-country skis. And so I worked at the infirmary at the time, and I'd have to cross-country ski over there. A sad thing that happened was there was an outbreak of the flu in our dorm, and actually I think it went through the whole college. And unless you had a temperature of over 104, you were not allowed into the infirmary because there was such an overload of students who were coming in.
I see.
So that was pretty serious. But on a lighter note, a number of girls were getting calls from ex-boyfriends who knew that they would be in. And, so there were a lot of calls saying, well, I knew you'd be in, and you know, I would be able to talk with you. So, and 30 years later, I feel like, you know, that was my first inundation with snow. I'm able to deal with the snow so much better now, but those memories of that first snow have never left me.
All right, Susan, well, thanks so much for that recollection. John Horgan, I want to come back to you with another question about the history of these big storms. We were talking to Governor Dukakis there about 78 being no joke in terms of, you know, we lost people. What about casualties, economic and fatalities from storms of long ago? What do we know about them?
Well, a lot of people perished due to exposure. They didn't have the houses with insulation in them like we have today. A lot of people tried to make it to work in terms of if they worked at a mill or tried to make it to a neighbor's house or to a sister, a relative, and they would just get swallowed up by the storm, and they would be found during the thaw. So they were certainly exposed.
They would be found during the thaw, as in not till spring.
Or when the snow diminished, right?
I see, right, okay.
Diminished, correct.
Right.
But it was a very tough time. In 1717, for instance, it was a terrible year. Three volcanoes had lofted some ash into the upper atmosphere in Indonesia, Japan, and the Philippines, and they had a very severe winter, and three storms hit in a row in early March. 5 feet of snow was measured in some areas. Animals were left out, exposed to the elements. In fact, they found a herd of 100 sheep had froze to death under a huge snowdrift. Two lived by gnawing on the wool of their fellow sheep. Animals were feeding off the top of the trees. They say that almost all of the deer population perished that year due to starvation or predation by bears or wolves.
Oh, boy.
John, I'm just wondering, you know, Governor Dukakis had mentioned that 78 was particularly problematic because it was a storm on top of what had already been a lot of snow for the season. And that seems to be the case for some of the big storms. They had so much snowfall because there was already so much on the ground. So is that typically how these storms, you know, these big storms that we remember years and decades, sometimes centuries later, is that how they got to be so big, was really their accumulations of several storms?
Correct. The storm that I just mentioned, 1717, the Great Triple Snows of 1786, which was the highest recorded tide in the history of Boston, and that stood for several hundred years. And then we had storms in the 19th century in 1839 and also in 1857. So it's like popcorn. You get into a trough, there's perturbations in the jet stream, and as they're saying for Boston, we could get flurries or light snow on Friday, and then there's something Monday they're not talking about. So you can get into patterns for sure.
Governor Dukakis, I want to get you back in this conversation. I mean, listening to John Horgan, as bad as 78 was, it sounds like you didn't have to deal with some of those issues. But I have a question for you. I wonder if you can give our listeners some insight about what goes on in that bunker, the command center, during this type of event. What do you spend your time doing as governor?
Well, it's all about the people that you've picked in advance to handle it. Hmm. If they're good, then you basically try to stay in touch, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when all the TV folks showed up and the radio folks showed up, and I had what turned out to be a regular daily press conference to tell people what they could and couldn't do, I'd turn to Secretary Barry and say, okay, Charlie, where are we? What do we tell people? And without him and his team that he had put together, trust me, it would have been chaotic. So it really depends heavily on one other recollection, for what it's worth. I remember the first storm particularly because I had a snowblower that survived for about 32 years. I bought it at Sears way back in 63. And I come home from the State House or someplace and got out with a snowblower and started working it, and I ran out of gasoline. So I walked up to a Getty gas station on Harvard Street in Brookline. It was just a few minutes away. And for some reason in those days, Gettys were run by Greek immigrants. And there was a light in the office, and I saw some people talking there, including the proprietor, who was quite obviously Greek. And I'll never forget, he had a big gold tooth in the middle of his mouth. And so I said to him, in Greek, I said, have you got gas? No, we don't have gas. Okay, so And I had this big parka with a hood, so I headed back out into the storm. And I'm not sure he recognized me, but the other guys in the office that were talking with him, the place had been shut down, apparently said, you know, that was the governor. So as I'm trudging back out toward the street with my gas can, with no gas, I hear this guy saying, "Hey, Mikey!" And I turn around and walk back, and there he is with his big grin and that gold tooth in the middle of his mouth, and he says, "Echoligaki, I have a little." I've never forgotten it.
That's great.
Well, I got my gas, and I finished cleaning up my driveway at about 10:30 at night.
Being governor comes with a few benefits, I guess, right? Once you're recognized.
Anyway, that was storm one.
So we'd like to bring another phone caller into this conversation. Paul is calling from Beverly. Paul, you're on the air.
Yeah, I worked at the New England Aquarium in 1978. And
you worked at the aquarium? I'm sorry?
The New England Aquarium.
Uh-huh.
And we were stationed there for 3 days. We weren't going anywhere. There's about 20 of us that were responsible for life support, and we lost power, so we had generators. But anyway, we had to keep the animals healthy and happy. And we realized there were 20 people there, but there was no food anywhere. The only thing we could find at a local store was pasta. So we got the pasta. We also realized we had hundreds of pounds of squid in the freezer for the animals, and that we had enough squid for both people and the turtles, sea turtles, and so forth. So one of the guys on staff that was stationed, I think we were maybe at the end of our second day, and we're really getting hungry, nothing to eat. So he was a chef, and he cooked up this massive calamari dinner for everybody. Because the food that they serve the animals at the New England Aquarium is restaurant quality. Huh. So in the middle of this blizzard, and by the way, I thought the governor did a great job. In the middle of this blizzard, we had this massive feast that kept us going. We were happy, so the animals were happy, and it all worked out.
So do you eat calamari to this day, and does that story come back to you all the time?
I had never had calamari up until that time, and I'm so glad we had an Italian chef who's in the engineering staff. I love this stuff, yeah.
Well, Paul, thanks so much for that recollection. Very quickly, Michael Dukakis, a final question to you. You became famous for, among other things, during this whole episode because of a sweater. What happened there? You became famous for your sweater.
Actually, it was a bunch of sweaters. I mean, I just have a lot of sweaters. I wear them a lot.
I see.
And so I'd put on a different sweater every day. And people still say to me, "Do you still have the sweater?" And I say, "Well, it was a lot of sweaters." What happened after the storm was that when I went out to speak places for months afterwards, at lunches or dinners, they would always present me with a sweater. I ended up with about 20 new sweaters as a result of that storm. And I hate to say this now, but I finally said to Kitty, "Hey, there's no way I'm going to use all of these sweaters." And I think I took a dozen of them down to the Morgan Memorial and said, "Please give them to people who need sweaters." But I remembered dinner after dinner, lunch after lunch, sure enough, at the end, I'd be presented with another sweater. But I had lots of sweaters. I still have them. I wear them a lot.
Well, there's former Governor Michael Dukakis. He was also a candidate for president, recalling the great blizzard of 1978. Governor Dukakis, thank you so much for joining us. We're very grateful.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Also, John Harrigan is a weather historian and host of The Folklorist. John Harrigan, great to have you as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
And stay with us. Coming up, we'll have the latest on the forecast, and we'll speak with a chef who is serving up dinner tonight, maybe calamari. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Anthony Brooks, and we hope you're staying warm, dry, and safe on this snowy day. We're tracking the blizzard that is blanketing the city and much of Massachusetts with a couple of feet of snow at least. For an update on how the storm is progressing and when it might end, WBUR meteorologist David Epstein joins us. Hi, David.
Good afternoon, Anthony and Deborah. How are you?
Good. So give us a sense of what's happening out there. When are we going to see this storm slow down or even stop?
Yeah, well, it's definitely slowed down already. If you sort of look outside, you'll see from time to time the snow kind of breaks in intensity. Right now, the heaviest bands are across the South Shore. If you were traveling, which most of us are not, but if you were traveling along Route 3 right now, down towards Cape Cod and the canal, that's where the heaviest snow is right now, and it also goes right over to Martha's Vineyard. There's also another band rotating, basically with Route 495, as it's been doing for much of the storm. It starts up in the Lowell Lawrence area and then rotates down through Worcester and keeps going right into Providence. So those are the two areas with the heaviest snow right now. The whole thing's going to start to rotate out of here during the evening hours. I think it'll be probably 10 to midnight when the most of the accumulating snow is finally done, but between midnight and 4 a.m. there could still be a little bit of light snow flurry activity, especially right along the coastline.
So most people, of course, stayed home today, but for those folks possibly heading back to work tomorrow morning, it sounds like the snow will be over. What kind of conditions will greet them tomorrow morning?
Well, in terms of meteorological conditions, it'll be just mostly cloudy, and we'll start to see breaks of sunshine developing once the sun gets up at just around 7 o'clock. And I think by the middle part of the morning and certainly by early afternoon, there'll be a lot of sunshine starting to develop as the storm finally pulls away. In terms of road conditions, the crews will have roughly from midnight, that will be the time that, you know, the accumulation has mostly stopped, all the way until 7 o'clock in the morning to kind of work on things. And the good news is because the snow is light, at least it's easier to move around. Because there's so much of it, it's kind of hard to find places to put it, however.
Now, tell us about this other storm approaching that we expect to be with us on Friday. What can we expect from that?
Yeah, so a lot of times what happens is after we get a big storm like this, then the models start, you know, showing another storm, and definitely there is another storm, but let's not get too excited about it. Right now it just does not look like a big deal, maybe a few inches of snow at worst. Of course that can change, but I do not see anything to sort of worry us. And then there's another system probably coming in sometime early next week. Again, right now it doesn't look like a major system at all. So even after the blizzard of 78, the models were forecasting another storm, and people started to think, oh my goodness, what's going on? But right now I just don't see us having successive big storms. We could have a few more inches of snow, certainly, but I don't think there's anything people should be, you know, kind of freaked out about.
All right. That's WBUR meteorologist David Epstein. David, thank you so much. We appreciate
it.
You're
welcome.
And listeners, to see David's maps of projected snowfall totals, you can go to our website, radioboston.org.
Well, if you were not among the crowds who rushed to the grocery store last night, don't worry. There are some restaurants that plan to open tonight despite this storm. Tony Maws is a chef at two of them, Craigie on Main in Cambridge and Kirkland Tap and Trotter in Somerville. And Tony joins us now from Kirkland. Hello.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Okay. Well, how are you is the real question. Why did you decide to open both restaurants, and how did everybody get to work?
You know, we've been doing this pretty much for all the storms since we've been a restaurant. And, you know, we sort of plan ahead, you know, certainly paying attention to the forecast and, you know, not getting everybody to work, saying, look, if you live far away, we get it. You know, you don't have to be here. But we certainly have a lot of people who work for both of our restaurants who live close by, who are brave enough to get up this morning and put their boots on and get outside. And then we also actually put some people up. Some people stayed at my house, some people stayed at one of my chef's house, some people stayed in a hotel that we put them up there just to make sure that they didn't have to worry about it. And they, you know, they get really excited for this because, you know, the reason why we do, the reason why we cook, the reason why we have restaurants is not for all the, you know, hocus pocus. It's because we cook food for people, and we're in two terrific neighborhoods. And we want to cook for the, you know, we want to cook for the people that are here, that have been locked inside all day and are ready to eat some great food.
And before we hear about the menu, you expect that you'll do, you know, a pretty solid business in this storm? And has that been the case in other storms when you've opened?
You know, it has. And it feels weird to say doing business because it's not really about that. We're just trying to throw a great dinner party that people can come to. Craigie on Main is almost booked as far as I know. I've been at Kirkland Tap and Trotter cooking all day. So, you know, Craigie on Main is doing what we're calling a Wimathon, where we've done our chef's whim traditionally on Sunday nights, but we're just doing it all night tonight. So you come in, you don't even have to think about anything. My team over there is just going to cook, you know, your choice of either four or six courses, and you get to sit back and relax and not have to worry about things for a little while. And at Kirkland, we bumped up our grilled oyster special a day. So usually that's on Wednesdays, but we're going to have grilled oysters tonight off the grill, and we're also doing our hamburger special tonight. So $12 for the fantastic Kirkland burger plus a full menu.
Hmm. And anything else? Any new additions to the menu?
You know, we made it a little hardier. We figured it was that kind of day. So I made a rustic white bean and kielbasa soup at Kirkland just for today, and we made a mussel chowder. We've got braised pork shanks, you know, some things like that are a little bit more stick to your ribs and, you know, soul warming kind of food.
Huh. And you do this every storm? You plan to continue to do it, I bet, then.
Well, I mean, I knock on wood. I mean, it's certainly requires some planning, but I kind of, in a weird way, consider it my civic duty. You know, we're a restaurant, and we've got food, and we want to make people happy. I mean,
feed us, Tony. It's your duty.
Hey, neighbor, I mean, you can come by anytime, and that's what we're doing. Whoever wants to venture out, we're going to be here late. We've got warm drinks, cold drinks, whatever you need. We're here.
Okay, Tony Moss, chef and owner at Craigie on Main in Cambridge and chef and proprietor at Kirkland Tap and Trotter in Somerville. He's keeping both restaurants open tonight. Tony, thank you. Have fun and stay safe.
You too, and thank you, and we'll get through the storm, and we'll look forward to some brighter days.
Okay. And for a full list of restaurants that are open tonight, including the 1369 Coffee House in Cambridge and Common Ground in Alston, you can go to our website, radioboston.org.
Yeah, good food is always fun, especially when there's a storm outside. And speaking of having fun in the winter, earlier today, we sent Radio Boston producer Jamie Bologna out to Amory Park and Coolidge Corner in Brookline to talk to some folks playing in the snow.
My name is Oliver. I'm from Brookline. And today we're just going sledding. There's so much snow that it's really hard to go fast, but it's really fun. It feels like a weekend because we have a day off from school also tomorrow.
Okay, last one, guys.
No, but I'm going to go on that one.
Okay, then Duval will go and then you can go on it.
My name is Katie Felici, and I'm from Brookline, Massachusetts.
I'm Josh Siegel, and I'm also from Brookline, Massachusetts.
So me and my fiancé were out here playing in the snow. We're originally from Michigan, so this is kind of bringing us back to our roots a bit. I mean, as you can see from his face, we just kind of got buried in the snow. So he is basically completely covered in snow. His beard has ice hanging off of it. I might have thrown snow in his face, so... That's why he looks that way.
Emily Mitchell. I'm from Coolidge Corner, but originally from New Jersey. I decided I wanted to take pictures of the blizzard, so I've just been wandering around Beacon, walking in the middle of the road. I'm going to make a snowman. That's what I'm going to do.
Some folks there enjoying the snow in Brookline earlier today, gathered by our producer, Jamie Bologna.